Welcome back to the Pinstripe Valley Podcast. I'm Andrew Mearns here with Matt Provenzano, Matt Ferencik. It's been a while since we last recorded. Internet problems, well, not internet problems, excuse me, technology problems with my computer. But either way, we're back now. So how are you guys doing?
Good. Very good.
Yeah, pretty good. For a win.
Yep, it's hard to really be upset at the Yankees at this point because they rebounded from starting off the season 3-6 and are now 17-10. Is that right?
That's correct.
So, not bad, and I believe they are in first place.
They are.
So, championship, right?
Book it. It's already done.
Oh, yeah.
They've already ordered the rings.
Yep, they're on pace for 102 wins, so, you know, where do we even need to watch the rest of the season now? I think we should go ahead and book the next two World Series as well.
Dynasty recipe acquired.
We have figured out the Dynasty recipe, guys. And the secret was the Gregorio. Yeah, the secret was the Gregorio Petit era. And you're right, AL MVP Chris Young. All the way. So, I mean, we have a whole bunch of stuff to discuss about the season so far, since it's been such a long time since we've actually talked. But how about we just go around and talk about one thing that we've all really liked about the season so far. So, start off, Matt F., what about you?
I think I have to go with AL MVP Chris Young.
Yeah, I mean... Obviously.
It sort of started this right before the season. I started making some like joking comments about how he's going to win MVP. And then he came out and started off really hot. It's hilarious.
I mean, yeah, it's been pretty delightful. He's hitting 308, 375, 677. With 6 doubles, 6 homers, and 8 singles. Which I think, compared to Mark Teixeira, is like hitting a ton of singles.
Yeah. No, I don't think anyone should be under any impression this is remotely going to continue. But no.
But yeah, and the whole fact that, you know, in 47 games, he's hit 9 home runs with the Yankees and an 88 with the Mets, he had 8. And hit a lot worse. So, good work, AL MVP Chris Young. Maybe you should play a little bit more than Carlos Beltran, who we should probably pause moment of silence in memory of Carlos Beltran.
In memory of the deceased.
You were cool one time and you had that walk-off home run last year.
When you didn't have a bone spur.
Far too young.
Though he still randomly leads the team in doubles, but everywhere else he's terrible.
It's because the only pitch... Because
like the only thing he ever hits.
Like, yeah, he doesn't make, like, very, very, very... It's either very weak contact, or it's, like, medium contact that goes into the gap. That's pretty much it.
Yeah, like... Yeah.
His hardest contact is, like, 375 feet to dead center, which is just, like, a fly ball out.
Yeah, half his hits are doubles.
I'd buy that.
What about you, Matt P? What's one thing you've really enjoyed so far?
That they're actually hitting.
I support it.
Yeah, I mean, to be honest, the pitching kind of is very similar to last year. The bullpen, I think, is slightly better, but I think that in general, the pitching is incredibly similar to last year, where, you know, they'll keep you in the game, and, you know, maybe they'll allow 3-4 runs, but, like, you're in the game. You're not going to be out of it. But I've been finding that early, the team doesn't just, like, roll over when they're down by 2 runs, or they seem to be getting ahead early. I mean, it really helps when Mark Teixeira has, like, 10 home runs and A-Rod has 6 home runs and Chris Young is magically hitting. And I mean, like, this is also on the heels of Beltran not hitting and Gregorius not hitting and Drew not hitting. But, like, pretty much other than that, everyone is, like, about league average or much better. And it also helps when the top three is Gardner, Ellsbury, A-Rod, Teixeira. And they're all hitting really well. I mean, I don't know if that's, like, sustainable at all, but I'm a fan.
Yeah, then you have as you just alluded to, Teixeira, who has 18 hits, of which 5 are doubles and 10 are homers, and only 3 are singles.
I would also like to say that Mark Teixeira's BABIP is still lower than his batting average, which is just, his BABIP is 121, and he has a 200 batting average, but he still has a WRC plus of 140. So his WRC plus is higher than his BABIP.
That is... What? What?
So if you even, if you assume that some of those things will drop in for singles, then like you have to assume that he's almost due for like positive regression in the singles department. Maybe not in the home runs department, but he's got to hit some singles eventually.
Yeah, I mean when you're blasting them out of the park, I'll take the trade off.
Yeah, for sure.
He could hit 200 all year, and if he hits, and if he manages to hit like 30 home runs, I would take it because he walks enough. And I know like some Yankees fans are going to be like, "That's not enough for whatever million they're paying him," but that's not the player he is anymore. If he could do this, it's a hell of a lot more useful than he was last year, and especially useful than when he was broke in 2013. He was broken in 2013.
the other thing is that people have a different perception of what the Mendoza line is. Like, batting 200 with 10 home runs now is much different than like 2005. If you had a 200 batting average like 10 years ago, that was dreadful. But like, there are plenty of hitters. Like, Todd Frazier has 8 home runs. He's batting 215, and like A-Rod 229. And Russell Martin, 237, and Jose Bautista, 205. All very good hitters, hitting really well, but, like, low batting averages. So I think judging him just by the batting average is just, like, looking at him through, a pinhole.
Yeah, like, he's not going to be a guy. He's probably not going to be a guy that hits 260. Maybe it's 250 at best, but... Hey, if he's hitting dingers, then that's fine. I don't know if he'll continue like the 30 homer pace or whatever he's on pace for, but as long as he's productive, and he's not usually productive, even when he was great, he was never this productive really early on. So that's been a nice treat too. So if he can manage to even like be okay the rest of the year, then that's still a pretty good season.
Yep.
And I feel like for my great thing so far, I feel like I have to go with A-Rod, because he's been the most entertaining part of this team, and it was especially evident when, you know, they're struggling and they were 3-6, and it still did feel a lot like 2013 and 2014, when it's like, oh my god, they're down 2-0, we're screwed. But you know, Teixeira, I don't think Teixeira was hitting quite as much yet, but A-Rod was hitting a bunch of dingers early on, and of course the chase to 660 while the Yankees whined about it was pretty terrific. And it's still remarkable to me that even as he approaches his 40th birthday, he still hits the ball hard. Like, I think on Fangraphs it said he has the highest hard hit ball percentage, is that correct?
Yeah, I mean, that's true. It was like over 50%. I think someone said that like that doesn't correlate well for like it doesn't have any like predictive value. So I take that with a grain of salt. But at the very least, like it almost like goes back to that. I'm sure you read that article from The Economist about like the signature significance.
Oh yeah.
About how there are certain events that players do that it's like impossible for them to be terrible if they can do certain things. I kind of group in the hard contact in the sense that if he was washed up, it would almost be impossible for him to be hitting the ball as hard as he has been. So you have to assume that he can't be terrible. He's just been too good to be dreadful. I think he's going to hit slumps, and I don't think he's going to be great for the rest of the year. But it's I don't see him being like dreadful.
I mean, also the rest of him is, knock on wood, but injuries. Like, he is kind of old.
Mm-hmm. And you've already seen a bit of this, like, tonight.
Yeah.
they played Petit at third base rather than risking A-Rod on the turf in Toronto, because apparently people have been getting hurt on that so far, so, you know, you don't really want to push it. But if he can maintain some semblance of health playing mostly at DH, then...
Yeah, I mean, just him included, but playing the offense in general, is that it's just nice that this year, like, I don't know, you get, like, A-Rod come up by hitting a home run, or even Chris Young come in by hitting a home run, where last year was Ichiro rolling one over a second.
Where Brian Roberts up and again, rolling over.
Yeah,
you at least, Derek Jeter, nothing much.
You at least don't have, like, dead bodies at each, like, you have, you know, the Carlos Beltran, but, like, I think that, I wrote about this a little bit, but I think we're at the point where we're far enough into the season where the results start to become a bit significant. Like, they haven't stabilized, but I think you have to start asking yourself, like, oh, this is definitely not the same team that they were last year. Where they're starting to push that needle forward, where you're like, oh, they can actually score runs. Because if you're scoring, I think they have 4.8 runs coming into this game. And Fangraphs says that they'll score about 4.4. I'd have to say, I think that's better than last year, if I'm not mistaken. So you have to say that they're kind of pushing the needle forward in the sense that they're definitely not the team they were last year. And every game that they play well like this, you have to be like, well, this can't be an illusion forever. It has to eventually be significant and be real. Because I think that after the past 2 years, we kept thinking like, oh, well, everybody's just old and injured and terrible. But eventually, if they keep playing well, you have to convince yourself that they're kind of okay.
And in like 2013, you know, they were still playing well around this time and getting like weird Lyle Overbay walk-off dangers and stuff.
But inverted wells and sitting well.
I mean, I really haven't looked at anything else, but it feels like they were a much worse... Yeah, I feel like they were like a much worse hitting team even 2013 than they are this year. Like, they may have been winning games like this in 2013, but I don't think... Again, I haven't played anything else that feels like they were way worse even at this point.
Yeah, I think that we all knew, even at the time, like, even I remember the Lyle Overbay home run game, and I was like, this is just so lucky. Like, it wasn't like, oh, of course. Like, if Mark Teixeira hit a home run, I'd be like, oh, of course. It's like, he's just kind of coming back to form. But it was almost like when guys like Lyle Overbay were, like, hitting home runs, it was like, it almost felt like they were being resurrected from the dead, which I don't get that feeling, because now I feel like... At least around the horn, you have, you know, decent players. You have McCann and A-Rod and Teixeira and like, you have, like, decent, like, Gardner, Ellsbury. Like, they're decent players. Like, they're average, at least average players. I don't feel like we had that feeling last year. I mean, last year you had, like, the corpse of Mark Teixeira with his wrist. You had Brian Roberts, old Derek Jeter, like Yonhair Vasilarte at third. That's not... And then, like, Carlos Beltran's bone spur in right field.
Just the bone spur. You know, as Matt F. mentioned earlier, just Ichiro grounding out. Alfonso Soriano swinging at everything.
Oh my god, it was terrible. So, I think that, you know, there's bad things about this team, but, like, I don't think that there's... I feel like there's a lot of teams where things are much, much worse.
Obviously, Masahiro Tanaka getting hurt was not an enjoyable experience, but I guess, I mean, it was something that we had a feeling would probably happen at some point, so blah.
Yeah. It's just almost, just really bothers me, because then everyone's like, see, we were right, should have just gotten the surgery. It's like, nah, not really. So I'm really hoping he comes back in a month and is good, but I'm keeping my expectations pretty low.
And even if he does come back in a month and is fine, the call for surgery will still be there.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's about all we can really say about that.
Yeah, it's like, I feel like we've just heard about, like, the should-have-got Tommy John surgery thing ad nauseum at this point. Mm-hmm. And I'm almost just immune to it now.
But like, everyone's gonna get their hot takes in.
Just don't read the comments anywhere. They're just all bad. Like, right after that injury, it's just like, oh, should have gotten the surgery. Like, just get it over with. It's like, nah. Like, I think putting people under a knife is not the first thing you want to do. So
she got surgery even though she yeah, invasive surgery, even though it's not necessarily
what the doctor's saying to do. It would be like going to a doctor and like they tell you you have some heart problems and they're like, oh, you could just take some medication, you know, to thin your blood. And you're like, no, I'll just get a quadruple bypass. Just get it over with.
This would be the best solution. This would be the best solution.
The doctor's like, no, it's really dangerous. Like, that's dangerous. You should just get a blood thinner and it'll be the same thing. No, no, just get the surgery over with.
It's that easy. Yeah, other than that, I mean, there really hasn't been too much negative. You just gotta, like... I mean, it's just easy. It's too easy to, like, knock on Drew and knock on Gregorius and Beltran. Because, like, yes, there are some possible ideas for replacements there, but Gregorius, he's not going anywhere. I don't get the sense that Drew is going anywhere anytime soon, unless he's still hitting, like, 150 in the beginning of June, maybe, but...
Yeah, I think they made it clear that Drew is staying for now, and I'm actually okay with that.
Yeah.
Because at least he can play defense.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's just the Beltran thing is just, I find incredibly troubling, because now... He's been bad for, like, a year now. It's just been the beginning of the season. And I know, like, last year he was injured and everything, but he's been bad for a while. And, like, he did have a short hot streak late last season when he was supposed to be recovering, but he's been bad for a good year and change. So...
I mean, at least Drew has shown some power, whereas Beltran is just...
So... Beltran had that weird injury in Tampa last year on, I think, April 17th. So since then, he's hit 216, 283, 356, which is 77 WRC plus with 11 home runs in 477 play appearances. That's really bad.
Right.
And that's a really, really, that's like a pretty large sample. So, like, I don't know how long you continue to ride that train before you start costing, because eventually you get to the point where it's not like he's replacement level, like, you're costing the team games. I mean, he's been below replacement. I mean, he's cost the team, like, a win over the past year and change. So I don't know how long you continue to ride that until you're like, okay, I think this experiment's over. I don't know if they're just obsessed with not having to admit that they were wrong.
I think they just don't like, sunk costs, which is... I guess I could definitely see Hal being like that, but... I mean, at some point, you do have to write it off, I think.
Yeah, because that's the thing you always hear about very smart GMs, you know, like the Billy Beans of the world. They're not afraid to cut their losses.
Mm-hmm. I guess the difference is that they don't have as... They don't have as many losses to cut with, like, Carlos Beltran, not $30 million. Though, comparatively to what, like, payrolls they might have to work with, it could be similar... But I do think that ultimately sunk costs do go up to, like, the owner's judgment. I don't know. That's just my guess.
Yeah, I mean, most of the projection systems still think that Beltran is, like, a league-average hitter in the long run. But, like, he could be that for this year, but he's definitely not going to be next year. You know, if he ages another year, I don't think he's a league-average hitter in a year from now at all. I think, like, at some point, he just becomes, like, the Alfonso Soriano. He just, like, disappears into, like, and just turns into dust. And the thing is, like, his BABIP is, like, higher than it was last year. Like he's just been so bad in, like, every way. And, like, all of his plate discipline stats, which are usually the things that stabilize really quickly, are all really, really bad. He's swinging at more pitches out of the zone. He's missing at more pitches in and out of the zone. So he swung at outside of the zone like 10% more than his career line. He's been swinging at more pitches in the zone, but his contact percentages have pretty much gone down for in the zone. And if you even look, like, anecdotally and just watch him, like, he can't even catch up to a fastball. Which, that's just a bad sign. At least you could see A-Rod, like, he can hit a fastball dead red.
Exactly.
And if you can't do that, then your bat speed, like, I can even tell just watching, like, his bat speed is just not there anymore. And, like, he could definitely be an okay hitter, but his defense is so bad. And because you're putting A-Rod in DH, you don't really have a position for him. He's just, like, this kind of and that doesn't really fit in anywhere. So, I say just, you know, eventually got to cut your losses and just say it was a mistake.
Right. Well, I guess we'll just have to wait and see what Hal does.
I have a question. So do you guys think that the Carlos Beltran signing was Brian Cashman's decision or the Steinbrenners?
I think actually they talked about this on Effectively Wild one time. Sometimes Yankees fans will, like, if they don't like a deal, they'll say, oh, that was more ownership than Brian Cashman. And Cashman has been kind of, like, done that at times, too, with, like, oh, I didn't want to give each other the contract. I wanted to sign Nate Sheerholtz or whatever. I could see Cashman finding some sort of logic to signing Beltran if he thought that Beltran could even be a semblance of the guy he was with the Cardinals in 2013. Yes, there were some warning signs for sure, but if he could at least be a useful hitter, then it would be worth it. And if they thought they were confident enough in the team in 2014 and Beltran was productive, then maybe that's the difference. It wouldn't surprise me if the Steinbrenners were like, hey, this Carlos Beltran's a guy, too, so you should get him. But I don't know. Obviously, we're just guessing, but...
It's true.
Yeah, I tend to agree with that.
I don't know if we thought he would be as bad as he was.
Oh, no, not nearly as bad.
No.
I think we thought he'd at least be a good hitter. I think that the defense is not surprising. I would not be surprised by the defense if you had told me in the past that this would look like.
That was going to be
but
a
I
disaster.
Definitely was surprised. Yeah, but I think that if you were to say he hit as bad as he has been, I would have been very surprised. I would have to say that it would be some freak injury or something. So I guess that's going to always cloud it, is that injury could really have ruined his career or ended his career, and that's really not something that anyone could have anticipated.
No.
So I guess if you go by the information that they had at the time, it wasn't a dreadful signing because, I mean, it was a slight overpay because they had to pay that third year that other teams sort of backed away on. They were sort of going...
The Royals bid higher. They think they offered him 3 years, 48, and he chose to go to the Yankees for a little bit less money.
That's right. So I guess that in hindsight... Not in hindsight, it seems terrible, but I guess if you go by what they had at the time, which was that he would be probably about 20% better than league average with bad defense, he'd be, you know, worth like a win and a half, which wouldn't have been terrible. But I don't think they would have expected, which was really like the 10th percentile of what would have happened.
And I don't think that I do think that it was a bad idea from the get-go to be playing him as much as they did in right field, but... I guess the DH spot, they were going with Soriano, part of it, and I don't know. But I never expected the defense to be anything. The offense has just been atrocious, and he doesn't even have the bone spur problem anymore, and he's a 44 WRC plus through 22 games. Which, granted, is only 22 games, but still, it's not an inspiring-looking 22 games at all.
But it's not like, it's not like he was good last year and he just happened to have 22 bad games. It's like he was bad last year, too. And it was even, like, while the injury wasn't even bothering him last year, he still was hitting poorly. So, rest in peace.
Yeah, I'm trying to bring up, I know when we made the signing, I did a post, like, essentially like a opinion post about like asking people what if they thought it was the right move or not. I'm trying to bring that up. There's a poll attached, but it's not loading, but I'm interested to see exactly what everyone's opinion was at that time, what the percentages were.
From when he was signed, you're saying?
Yeah. December. Yeah. It went up December 7th, 2013, but I can't get it to load, so never mind. Oh wait, here it goes. Let's see. 49% liked it. 24% loved it. 11 disliked it, 7 hated it, and I added 2 joke options in there, which got 6% and 3% votes.
That's actually pretty interesting, because the crowd isn't terrible at predicting these type of things. Like they have a slight intuition.
Yeah, Yeah, it's kind of like the same idea as like on Fangraphs with like the was a defensive stat that like kind of surveys fans rather than does advanced defensive metrics. The fan scouting reports, like sometimes it can be falsy, obviously, but they do have sometimes interesting results.
Yeah, the crowd does a pretty good job of predicting stuff. So, and I think that if I probably wrote something at the time, but if I remember the projections correctly, it was like he was supposed to be a 120 WRC plus and like a 1.5 WAR player in 2014. And then, like, a 1 WAR player this year, and then, like, a 0.5 WAR player the last year. So, like, I think we all knew that, like, next year he was going to be bad, and, like, we all knew that. But I think we expected him to be, like, a 110 WRC plus now. And now the projections say he's, like, a 100. So, like, he's been basically dropped, like, 10 points of true talent, and you didn't even get the nice talent of 2014. So I guess it's partially that, like, it's more of a freak thing, I would say, than, like, it was just a poor signing. Because there just aren't that many bats available in free agency. Right. I mean, like, people are saying how great the Nelson Cruz signing has been these past 2 years. But, like, other than that, there really haven't been other bats that have just been impact bats in free agency. Most of them are locked up long-term.
Yeah. I mean, I feel like my gut would have been to not sign him, but, and yeah, we are kind of squinting to, like, kind of see some way where it kind of made sense, but I would say the consensus from us is that the gut reaction is that probably wasn't the best plan, but oh well.
No, it wasn't, but at the same time, I think that we, go ahead.
No, I didn't mind it when it happened, but I also don't think that's what I would have done. Like, that's what I was hoping, or rather what I was hoping they would do. Mm. I should say, so I have no idea what I would do if I was general manager. Probably, like, destroy everything, but...
Yeah.
At the same time, we would have been pretty pissed if Ichiro was playing every single day.
Oh, God.
Oh, yeah.
Like, if he was the regular right fielder, and, like, you know, you don't even know. Because the thing is, we also assume that if Beltran was playing for a different team, if, let's say, he put into the Royals, you're assuming that he would have been exactly the same as he is now, which we don't know that.
Right.
You know, if he doesn't get injured, and he... Because the thing is, he was hitting fine before he got injured. Mm-hmm. And he looks pretty good. So, you know, in some alternate universe, he's hitting fine, and he doesn't get injured, and then we're saying to ourselves, oh, wow, Ichiro's playing right field, and Cashman didn't sign anybody, you know, and now we're just down to bat. So I guess on the same token, not signing him would have looked bad in retrospect anyway. Unless it's just the same thing happened, which we don't know.
Yep.
Here's a thought. Maybe they keep Brendan Wells around another year.
Ah!
I mean, he was on payroll last year.
He was. Yeah.
Right, I don't think they would have actually done that either way, but still.
Well, I'm sure, he may still have a projection, actually. Even though he's still not playing, he's not playing anymore. Let's see. So, Steamer says he would be an 82 WRC plus player right now, which I think is kind of generous, actually.
Yeah.
And his wife says that he is a 70 WRC plus gutter repairman.
But I think a lot of that has to do with playing time, because that 2013 he had like almost 500 plate appearances, which, God help us all.
That's very 2013.
Right. We're talking about 2013 and Carlos Beltran too much.
Love sadness.
Yeah, let's redirect to more fun things, like Michael Pineda. Michael Pineda is a lot of fun.
Cool.
I support
not 2013 Michael Pineda.
No, 2013 Michael Pineda wasn't really a thing. he pitched some innings in the minors rehabbing, that was about it. But man, he is with Tanaka down, the Yankees were kind of hoping that that Pineda would take a step up even beyond where it was, and he's been pretty terrific, and he was awesome tonight against the Blue Jays, so. Substantial Miguel.
3 watts all season.
Yes.
That's not terrible.
It's okay. It's okay.
I think that Michael Pineda's walk rate is the most ridiculous thing.
Oh, do you know what his walk rate is now?
It's a point. Oh, it's just point under 13. 6.9.
0.69.
Nice. It's 0.6.
Nice.
So he has, since he's been pitching for the Yankees last year, he only has 10 walks allowed.
That is amazing. Like,
that's in like,
I don't remember who,
it's like almost 100 innings.
I don't remember who did the post the other day about like the Yankees as Avengers, but I think they picked Dylan Betances as the Hawkeye, but I would have picked Michael Pineda because Michael Pineda does not issue walks. It's not just not a thing. And what I really love about Michael Pineda is that like when he came up in 2011, he had a 2.9 walks per nine, which is still pretty good, especially for a rookie. He had the surgery, he's come back, and he's even better.
His pitches got better. And that changeup he started throwing was just nasty. Like, I kind of was, like, kind of new.
Oh, yeah.
It's also great, because, like, you don't really expect these big, like, beefy, tall dudes to be, like, have this amazing control, but somehow he does.
Yeah, his walk rate right now is lower than Cliff Lee's best season. But you know, granted, Cliff Lee did that in like 212 innings in 2010. But still, it's just crazy to consider.
Yeah, and I'm sure there was something like Maddox, his best season, his walk rate was 0.77.
Sucks.
I'm not mistaken. In 1997, he had 20 walks. In 232 and two-thirds innings. So, I don't think he'll get to that, Michael Pineda, but it's still pretty awesome that he's doing it. He just pounds the zone. And it's not even like he pounds the middle of the zone. He just hits the black every time.
Yeah. It's just, he's just like, oh, strike. And it's like a lot better than like, Good Phil Hughes is on the Yankees. He always had pretty good walk rates. Not like this good, but still pretty good. But his problem is that he could never really like command it within the zone. It always ended up being flat and going deep.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, everything Michael Pineda throws has incredible moments.
Yeah. Funny you mentioned Phil Hughes. So I was just thinking, like, I would love it if he broke that record that he set last year just to crush Phil Hughes' spirit once again. It'd be hilarious.
Oh, yeah, and there's also the fact that Pineda doesn't really give up home runs either. Since last year, he's given up 7 home runs and walked 10 people. So,
take that.
Yep. And I feel like we'd be remiss if we didn't talk about the bullpen at all. Because they are, you know, save for David Carpenter's shitstorm tonight, they've been pretty tremendous.
Yeah.
I think they're one of the, I think it's the like the best, next to the Royals, I'd say they're the best bullpen in baseball. Mm-hmm. Let me see if I could find some numbers. So the Yankees are second in F4 for relievers. They have a FIP of 2, this is before this game, a FIP of 2.97 and ERA of 1.86. Which is nuts, because they, you know, pitch in Yankee Stadium. And I think the strikeout rate is ridiculous, 10.37.
Well, then you got, you know, Andrew Miller and Dylan Betances, just this ridiculous combination at the end of the game.
I can't even imagine. Like, that's probably the best combination that the Yankees have had. Since probably the Moe-Wetland combination.
Yeah.
Maybe, like, I mean, last year...
Robertson and Moe had some good years together, too, I would say. Maybe not this high potential, though, just because of how ridiculous Andrew Miller and Dylan Betances were last year. Granted, it's possible that neither of them has a year like that again, but they are definitely talented enough to do it.
Yeah, I don't see Betances dropping off this year. Maybe next year, but right now he's just so dominant. I guess the only thing is his command can get a little iffy at times.
Right.
And we saw that, but he just, his stuff is so nasty that, you know, as long as he gets those strikes, it's just not hittable.
Yeah, and then meanwhile you have Andrew Miller, 23 strikeouts and 13 and two-thirds.
I mean, Betances has walked people, but he is not allowed to run.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and that was even with early, like in the first couple games, Dylan was a little wild, and there is the panic from spring training. People be like, "Uh-oh, his velo was down." Meanwhile, like I think he hit 98 in like the seventh game of the season. We were like, "Oh, I guess he's okay."
It's like, so maybe you don't have to hit 98 in March.
You know, I guess not. You don't really have to blow away the Addison Marizacs of the world with 98 if you don't have to. So now we're going to do a short little game, similar to the one we did last year where we drafted AAA players. I'll let Matt P. introduce this since he suggested it.
Yeah, sure. Yeah, so what we'll do is we're going to do a Yankees minor league prospect draft. So we're all going to get to choose three minor league players. They cannot have any major league service time this year, if I'm not mistaken. Actually, no, they can. They can have major league service time this year. They just have to be in the minors currently. And we have to draft our players, and whoever accumulates the most F4 over the course of the next of this calendar year will win the contest. So low stakes, but
all the prizes.
Yeah, the sweet blogger coin.
Yes.
Okay, so
I believe we did one of these last year where I took Fred Lewis.
I think you did. Yeah. I think that he's now been released from the organization.
R.I.P.
You were cool once.
So I will randomly generate a number. So I guess I'll get one, Matt F. will get two, and Andrew will get three, and I'll just generate a random number. Two. So that is Matt F. So you get to choose first, Matt F.
I'm going to take Brian Mitchell.
Okay.
All teams need starters, more than five starters, I should say, and Yankees have already used a sixth, but probably need a seventh. So I think Brian Mitchell's pretty decent. So I figure he'll get at least some spot starts and have a chance to pick up some more.
Yeah, I think there's a modest chance that he becomes like this year's version of Shane Green, too.
Yeah, that's definitely possible.
And not the 2015 version of Shane Green, which turns out isn't quite a Cy Young Award winner.
No. He's not. They did not win the trade. Okay. Andrew, you're next.
I'm going to take Jose Perella. I mean, it's a little bit cheating since we already know he's probably going to join the team tomorrow. But I think he's got to be near the top of this sort of draft just because he's an infielder. He could end up seeing a little bit of time. I'm not as high on him as some other people are, but I do think he is a useful player that could produce like positive FOR if he's used in the right roles. Then I do consider it a possibility of him just blowing up entirely. But
Yeah, that's the other challenge is you have to find players that won't explode because then they'll just destroy your whole thing because it's only three players.
People who won't get overexposed like Zoilo did.
Yeah, may he rest in peace.
David Adams.
We had a brief talk about David Adams while you were trying to reconnect your internet. He's apparently with the Marlins AA team.
Good for him.
Yep.
Okay.
Yeah, who's your pick, Matt P?
I will do like a snake draft, so I'll pick twice.
Okay.
So I will pick Jacob Lindgren and Rob Refsnyder. Those are pretty self-explanatory. I actually am not sure. I'm pretty sure that both of them will get a chance to play at the major league level this year, although I feel like Rob Refsnyder has been slowly slipping down the rankings because of his poor defense. But if he turns it around, I think he'll get a chance.
I agree.
But I think that him as being the savior of second base has kind of been fading away a little bit. So, okay. Andrew, you're up.
I'm going to go with Nick Rumbelow because he's a guy who's not quite... I feel like if Now, obviously, this is like an alternate reality where Jacob Lindgren isn't in the organization. But if Lindgren wasn't in the organization, we'd be talking about Nick Rumbelow a lot, just because he really rose the levels last year, struck out a ton of people, and he's, yeah. I mean, he hasn't got off to the best starts in Scranton this year. He's allowed a few runs, but he has a 14.5 K per nine and 2.2 walk per nine, and I don't think that the homers will keep up with the three homers in 12 innings. So, I think he's a pretty safe fit. To safe pick to appear at some point. So, go with him.
Cool. My F.
Okay, I'll take Ramon Flores. I'm guessing he would be the option they called up if they decide to fire Beltran to the Sun.
Yep, that sounds about right.
Yeah, you also get one more pick.
Okay, I'll just go with Austin Romine, because I figure he'll probably called up at least in September, and I don't even know if I'll play enough to torpedo it, but he might get me like 0.1 more.
Something.
Good old Roman. Sorry you didn't get picked up by some team.
With the Yankees before.
Yeah. I'm still a little surprised he was there. He didn't get picked up by anybody.
Yeah.
Like,
I mean, Salvador Macchia may not get traded.
Yeah, but Romine supposedly still has, like, good defensive reputation, so.
Yeah.
I don't know. Now, it's too bad that we didn't do this, like, draft a little bit earlier, you know, when my computer was working, or when my computer wasn't working, because then Chase Whitley would have been an option. He probably would have been the steal of this draft.
Yeah, probably.
He might have been, like, the first or second pick.
Mm-hmm. Not quite as good as, like, number one overall pick, Francisco Arcia. But I still need to calculate who won that.
On Gratterall.
I think Arcia actually didn't get cut until, like, the last day, even though he didn't really play. But I don't know. We'll see if I decide to have the effort to go through that. I'll go with Tyler Austin. He might make a pick or an appearance late in the season as, like, outfield depth. Yeah. So, I mean, I think he's on the 40, so that he has that over, like, Slade Heathcott. So.
Yeah,
he is.
Okay. I, for my final pick, will go with Tyler Webb. Because I do think that even though the bullpen's pretty stacked up, I do think that they will give Tyler Webb a shot. And he strikes out a lot of people.
Yeah.
A lot of people. Let me see if I can find his numbers.
So I bet
he's
just
a 9 per 9.
He's also tall.
What was that? Yeah.
He's tall. He could be another Yankee basketball player.
And he was born only 3 days before me.
Hmm.
Yep. So he's got that going for him.
He had 26 strikeouts in 20 innings last year in AAA. And he had 51 strikeouts and 35 and two-thirds in Double-A, so he strikes out a lot of people. I'm not sure if he's a Lugie or not. I really don't know the platoon stuff on him, but I feel like he'll get a shot in the bullpen. Okay, so Matt F's three picks were Brian Mitchell, Ramon Flores, and Austin Romine. Andrew's were Jose Perella, Nick Rumbelow, and Tyler Austin. And mine was Jacob Lindgren, Rob Refsnyder, and Tyler Webb. So we will put that on the back burner. I would probably make like a little Google Doc for it, so if people would want to look at it, they can take a look at it, but it'll kind of sit on the back burner until, like, September when we get a better idea.
I'm not really impressed with my picks.
yours may end up being the better ones, because I feel like Matt F. and mine are guys that will definitely get called up, but they could be bad.
Hmm. Yeah.
This is kind of
a possibility where you almost get. There's almost a possibility you just get a net zero and win.
That's true. I think I came close to winning with almost a net zero last year or something like that. I think whoever has Zoilo had like got yanked way the hell down.
I don't think any of my guys made it last year. So.
Yeah, I remember I calculated it at one point in the off season, and it wasn't pretty. All right, so Tyler Webb's platoon splits right now. So last year at Scranton, it was better against righties than lefties in, granted, only 17 games. But this year, he's better against lefties than righties. And again, like, you know, 9 games, but still. So, remains to be seen. All right, so that's the...
Hey, that's righty.
Oh, good. That'll be a nice little surprise to pull out at some point. Now coming up to pinch hit for Steven Drew is... Wait, is that Tyler Webb? What?
Whew.
Okay, so now we'll move on to the tweet bag. There are a bunch of questions that we have to answer. So we'll go right into that. First, the questions on the site. From Matt Ferenchik, who should we trade? I'm going to hang up and listen. Who is this Matt Ferenchik person?
What a clown.
Gotta know. Well, I think we should trade Beltran for Cheetos. Could we get Cheetos?
I guess the thing about... it's kind of an even trade because Cheetos, they kind of just, like, they stick around. They, like, they taste good at first, but then they just feel gross inside of you.
Yeah.
How fast do we get hung up on if we ask for Cool Ranch Doritos?
Yeah, they would be like, it's like, all right, so we're thinking about unloading Carlos Beltran. Look, I'm not going to assume that. No, we'll assume all the salary. You just have to give us Cool Ranch. You wouldn't even finish the word. And from Kayshaw 90, has Jacoby Ellsbury continued his side job as a trader? You know, he might have. Now with that mustache, he looks like he could be maybe a bandit of some sort.
I feel like New York would be like a good place to be like a stock trader. Probably better than Boston.
That's true. You just run into Jacoby Ellsbury, he's like plying some trade under the tree. It's like, hey, do you want to buy stocks in this company? Wait a minute, are you Jacoby Ellsbury? Maybe. My identity is not your concern. Only your stocks. Alright, next. Aaron Shelby Rose says, why did we not continue to win yesterday? Is it just because Girardi's an idiot, or is there another reason? I mean, really, if the boss was here, crash, door caves in. ASR is dragged away by men with a butterfly net. Which is a pretty...
It's true.
Yeah, I mean, that's what you get for wondering if the boss is here. It's like that, our cartoon of, like, we need batteries to, like, power the boss rolling over in his grave or something?
No, it was you attach a if you attach a generator to the boss turning over in his grave and you get an infinite amount of energy.
Ah, brilliant. Greg asks, why didn't you try and kickstart for some better podcasting tech? Well, apparently, I did not think of as brilliant fundraising strategies as Greg did, so.
I mean, we can only have one Kickstarter per blog, and the moment it's taken up for Greg and LTL to go to NYY State, so.
That's true, yeah, and I'm not sure how that fundraiser is going. I hear there are some perks in there for, like...
I don't know if they've gone yet, so probably not well.
Yeah. I wonder what the perks are for the Kickstarter. It's like, for X amount, LTL will introduce you to Meredith. Like, then there's like a disclaimer. No, it might not be honored. Okay.
Might immediately get arrested.
Yeah, that is a big disclaimer. That's why she has a lead foot, like she was talking about tonight. gotta get away from LTL. Okay, now some actual questions on Twitter. How soon do you think the Yankees abandon Drew, Petit, and Beltran? That's from Haha Miranda.
Hopefully yesterday.
Yeah, well, Petit might actually be gone. After you got drilled in the hand and Perella's already with the team. Which I think it's good, but it's kind of awkward too. It's like, Perella's in the clubhouse, so they know that someone's going. So Yeah. But he's just there. Hey, guys. But that doesn't bode well for Gregorio Petit's future, I don't think.
No, but I think that Beltran will stick around for a little while and
so will Drew.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think... So
Petit will... I can see Beltran getting DFA'd before Drew. Really, I didn't see Beltran getting DFA'd before Drew.
Yeah, I don't think that would happen. Because Drew's just on a shorter commitment. So Drew does at least provide, like, fielding decency.
Right. And Beltran's just, like, shown nothing. At least Drew has shown some glimpses. I don't know. I'm probably very wrong on that, but... I don't know. Yeah, I feel it's... like the leash would be somewhat shorter than Beltran, almost.
Yeah, it's possible. Either way, Petit's probably gone by tomorrow, then either Drew or Beltran. It'd probably take until... I'm just spitballing, but I'm guessing it wouldn't, we wouldn't see any traction with them move until maybe July, at best, so.
Yeah.
All right, next, from Mr. Baseman90, what did David Carpenter do to Girardi to get himself banned from high leverage situations? Bonus points for creativity. Well, you saw!
I think this tweet was sent before the game.
Yes. But I guess we'll pretend like the tweet or David Carpenter's performance tonight didn't actually happen, and there was no obvious reason for Carpenter not pitching in high leverage situations. So
yeah.
what did he do to piss off Girardi?
Well, in the future, he's going to do this.
Yep.
I mean, I guess I know people would talk about that.
Maybe he did some sort of practical joke with the binder, and, like, he replaced all the pages with, like, a coloring book, and Joe Girardi didn't really like the joke, so.
Maybe they just didn't like him, like, they'd seen him, cause, like, you have to guarantee they'd seen him pitch in private more than we've seen him pitch in public, and they just may not like, I'm sure they have an internal hierarchy of who they think is the best, and I'm sure he's just sort of at the bottom of the list. And he has to sort of build up the quote-unquote, you know, he has to build up into that quote-unquote circle of trust. And I can guarantee that he's not, you know, in that circle of trust yet. And
especially not after tonight.
No.
It's like the
opposite. I think it actually is that Carpenter spoiled an episode of Mad Men for Girardi.
Ooh. That could be it. It's like, Carpy, what did I tell you?
Carpy. Davey.
Come on, Davey. Alright, next from at Aaron Shelby Rose. I guess it's another question from him, but as a precaution, are you going to get the podcast Tommy John surgery?
It's already been done. What happened was we got a partial tear.
Yeah, my computer had a partial tear in the ligaments, and had to see Dr. James Lenovo. And I hope he's rehabbing right now, but hopefully the plasma therapy will work.
Now throwing off a mound, so
yes,
he'll be ready to go soon.
Oh, just off topic, we did while your internet was loading, we found out Johan Santana has no timetable for his return at the moment with the Blue Jays. I know you're shocked.
Sure.
And we were saying that he will be, like, on his deathbed, and there will still be a reporter tweeting, there's no timetable for his return.
Yeah. The year is 2050.
Johan Santana throwing from 90 feet. No timetable. Progress has been really slow. He gets sore from time to time. Hashtag Blue Jays.
It'll be like those BRF pages that, like, of some guy who played at the 1800s, but there's no death listed for him. Even though they're obviously clearly dead, they're not listed, so it's going to be like that. That's like, for eternity, that's going to be the last news story about them.
Right. Alright, and the last feedback question, besides, is from A.D. Gilfillan. I might be mispronouncing that, sorry. But besides Whitley, what pitchers might get called up this year?
Ryan Mitchell.
Yeah. I mean, we just talked about some of them in our little draft there. Mitchell, Lindgren, Webb, Rumbelow. Yeah, that's That's probably the extent of it. I'm sure there'll be some others that'll just randomly emerge.
Maybe like Jose Ramirez.
Yeah, yeah, he's on the 40, so he might make an appearance.
Will Kane Rodriguez?
I don't think he will. Didn't he get suspended? No,
yeah.
Yeah, he did get suspended.
Will King. Okay, so that's the tweet bag. As always, we appreciate your tweet bag questions and emails. Now we'll go straight ahead to the Yankee and the Mitre of the Week. I haven't brought out the Mitre horn in a while, but
yeah,
it's back. And I guess instead of the week, we'll go of the month. So for the season's first month. So, Matt F., who was your Yankee of the month?
Well, I talked about it earlier, but I would like to shout out to Chris Young, but I will actually go with Jacoby Ellsbury, who I believe is hitting 7,000, 8,000, 15,000. I believe those are that's his slash line, something like that.
Yeah, I think approximately that about nails it. After tonight's game, it's 358, 433, 415.
That's pretty good.
It's okay.
I mean, yeah, only 4 extra base hits, though, which is funny.
Yep, but 11 steals. So, basically, those are extra base hits.
Yeah, essentially.
And I feel like pretty much all of the caught stealings, there was one pickoff, and then I think there were, like, 2 or 3 where he was, like, nailed by a perfect throw.
Yeah.
So, Ellsbury has been pretty tremendous. Alright, Matt P., who's your Yankee of the Week?
It is Alex Rodriguez, because, or should I say the ghost of Alex Rodriguez, currently hitting 227, 340, 489.
Dang.
With 6 home runs, 127 WRC plus. I don't know how he's doing it. I didn't think that he'd even be capable of doing that in 50 plate appearances.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Well, just ask Bill Madden.
Yeah, he's definitely taking again.
He's on the juice.
And all the home runs were fixed. But, yeah, it's been pretty good. I mean, he's just fun to watch.
I love it, like, when he... I love it when you see, like, a beat writer tweet about him and they click on that tweet and, like, the first response is, they should be testing him. Like, they're not.
Yes, I'm sure right now, like, once I reinstated him, Rob Manfred's like, alright, A-Rod, you know that meeting in December? They just pinky promised that he wouldn't these steroids again.
And, like, they realized they made us like, oh my god, we totally forgot to test him. All those people on Twitter, they found out first.
Oh no! Twitter, you've beaten us to the punch again!
Next time, they'll just crowdsource the joint drug.
It's like the idea of like, someone watching the Yankees like tearing their hair out, like.
Yeah,
so next time the joint drug agreement will just be crowdsourced via Twitter.
Exactly. Alright, my Yankee of the month is going to be Andrew Miller, because he was ferocious in April, as we mentioned, I think as we briefly touched upon before. He's 11 for 11 in save opportunities, and I just tweeted this on Tuesday night. But he is the He's 11 for 11 save opportunities in the team's first 27 games, and even Mariano Rivera was only able to do that twice. So he's been pretty tremendous, especially for someone, like, obviously the whole, like, closer, proven closer, closer experience, whatever you want to call it, is overrated. But there is definitely some factor in there. Where, like, not just any reliever can always do it. And he's just been completely unfazed by, like, yeah, I'll be the closer, so whatever. And I think it's really cool that he's also been, like, yeah, it doesn't really matter to me that much when I pitch. Just because I've always been, like, a random reliever. At least since, like, he was converted from a starter. So he doesn't really seem to care that much. So thanks, Andrew Miller. You're a neat dude. Alright, Mitre of the month. Ben F., what do you think?
I'll pick the obvious answer and Carlos Beltran, which is bad and old and bad and old.
R.I.P. You were bad. You should do his eulogy.
You were once a great player, but then you died. The end.
Yep.
I think what the problem with Carlos Beltran is, you know, what is like in Greek mythology, you have to put the two coins over their eyes so they can cross the river Styx. I think it's because someone in his surgery, in his bone spur surgery, no one ever put the two coins over his eyes, so he's just wandering aimlessly in the underworld trying to cross the river Styx.
And that would explain a lot, so... You could be on something there. More on this as it develops. Alright, Matt P., who's your Betrayer of the Month, or whatever?
I guess it's Steven Drew. I mean, he has played decent defense, but he just hasn't hit. And he did hit that Grand Slam, but that's pretty much all the memorable things I can think of. I guess his BABIP was really low, so I guess he'll regress to something more normal. And I don't think he's going to be, like, so bad, but he's going to be pretty bad.
Yeah. It's not great.
So.
I'm going to go with for my Betrayer of the Month, someone who's not even, like, on the team right now, really, but Brendan Ryan, just because he's kind of a joke. Like, he got hurt, like, what, the second or third to last day of spring training after missing nearly all spring training due to injury anyway. And so the Yankees had to go out and get Gregorio Petit. And not that anyone was, like, pining for him to come back as soon as possible, but he recently suffered, like, a setback. And so we don't really know when we're going to see him. And again, it's not like I'm pining for him or anything, but I'm just amused by him. By his, like, badness.
I mean, if Perella comes back and is decent, do we see him ever again? Probably not.
He might, I don't know. I hope not, but... I don't know. Well, either way, I do remember, like, I think you had, shortly after, like, the setback, Tanny had commented about it, and then I think you had replied, Bad F, like... R.I.P. Brendan Ryan died of bad. Which is pretty much on the nose. Okay. I think that'll just about do it for us on the Pinstripe Ballet Podcast, unless either of you guys have anything else.
Nope.
Okay. Well, we will... hopefully not have as nearly as long a break as between podcasts as we did for this time, because now that my computer is working again, knock on wood, we should be getting back to like a weekly show. So definitely send in any tweet bag questions you have to @PinstripeAlley, or put them in the tweet bag fan shot on the site when I put that up on the day of podcast recordings. Again, you can find me on Twitter @MearnsPSA. You can follow Matt Provenzano on Twitter @MattProv94. You can follow Matt F. on Twitter @MattF15. And follow our GIFs account. That's definitely in the midst of posting a ton of GIFs during games. So PSA_GIFs. And like us on Facebook, facebook.com/PinstripeAlley. We recently passed 4,000 likes, so thank you all. We'd like you too. And lastly, rate and review us on iTunes. Definitely with the new year, could use some new ratings. Let us know how we're doing. Let us know what we need to do, what we need to stop doing, etc., etc. Alright, so I think that'll just about do it for us. So for Matt Provenzano, Matt Ferencik, Xander Mertz, have a great night.